What happens in the sky affects life down here on Earth. The Celestial Compass shows you how and guides your way with astrology you can use from professional astrologer Kathy Beal. Every episode features her light-hearted, practical forecasts and navigational tips, blended with humor, optimism, and a love of patterns, symbolism, and pop culture references. Kathy translates technicalities into concepts that apply to real life. You'll learn how the current moment ties to where we've been, from the recent past to cycles that last happened years ago, and get a look at where we're heading. And much more, from special topics to special guests. The Celestial Compass, enlightening, entertaining, and empowering. Here's your host, Kathy Beal.
Greetings, Earthlings. This is Kathy Beal of EmpowermentUnlimited.net. And I want to bring you up a little bit on the astrology before we get into today's guest and our topic, which actually have everything to do with the astrology and the calendar. This show is airing during the week of Thanksgiving in the United States, and the remaining days in November astrologically fit in very well with that. We have the sky is lightening up. There's the sensation that you can move around and get things. A majority of planets are in mutable signs as opposed to the fixed signs that have been keeping us kind of in place with the eclipses. And we have Mercury, Venus, and as of tomorrow, as of the 22nd, the Sun in Sagittarius, wide-ranging, high energy, philosophical, expansive, exploring, fond of the outdoors, fond of letting the mind run far and wide, and ruled by Jupiter, expansive, boundary-pushing, bounteous, the guy, I say, who ups the ante of any action that he gets involved with. Jupiter is always look on the bright side. He's the guy who points out the silver lining at the same time as he tells you to go ahead and have two more servings of dessert. Very into indulgence. But all of this spells a happier, lighter, more optimistic mood, a sense of energy and excitement and enthusiasm and ability to joke, a lightening of the air. On the 23rd, we have the new moon in Sagittarius, fueled by Jupiter, who rules Sagittarius. So this is a time this week to really monitor, notice what your outlook is, brighten it, set intentions and wishes that are a little further ranging and adventuresome than maybe what you have tried before. And any dream you have, make it bigger, make it bigger, make it bigger. And one way to fuel all of this is, here we have the loop, to monitor your attitude and look at life in terms of gratefulness or gratitude. We are talking today about the power of gratitude with returning guest. I'm so thrilled. Ramananda John E. Welshans, who's a spiritual teacher who has a real knack for making esoteric concepts accessible in daily life. He is a highly respected contemporary spiritual teacher who lectures and leads meditation courses. I highly recommend them throughout North America. He has been a practitioner of Vipassana, I'm sure I am mangling that, mindfulness meditation, and various forms of yoga for more than 50 years. In addition to his latest book, One Soul, One Love, One Heart, The Sacred Path to Healing All Relationships, he is also the author of Awakening from Grief, Finding the Way Back to Joy, and When Prayers Aren't Answered, two books that emerged from 45 years of experience helping people deal with dramatic life change and loss. Welcome, John. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Kathy. Thank you so much for inviting me to be here. Wonderful to be with you.
I got wonderful feedback the last time that you were my guest. I really appreciate it. And I'd like to start with a seemingly simple question that may end up being incredibly complex, and that is, can you define gratitude?
You want to start there, do you? Well, okay. Well, I think that it's really the state of being in which we are grateful. It's the state of being in which we literally offer thanks for whatever it is we have that we want to offer thanks for. And it's important, I think, spiritually, because we tend to live in a culture that tends to be very outwardly focused, and we're what in psychology is known as other-directed, and that means we're looking outside ourselves for approval and acceptance and fulfillment. And gratitude is actually the state of being content with what we have. And that doesn't mean that we become complacent or that we don't have goals and dreams and things like that, but we can get too focused on what we don't have and lose sight of all the amazing things we do have. So that's really what we're talking about when we're talking about gratitude from the spiritual point of view. We're talking about cultivating a conscious awareness of our gratefulness for everything that the universe has provided for us. Even if there are things that we think we're lacking, this is just setting that aside and saying, but what is it that we can be grateful for, that we should be grateful for? Does that answer your question?
Yes, and this makes me think of a practice that I have heard from people who are in AA, of just at night detailing every simple thing in their life they can think of that they should give thanks for. I mean, even down to, I have a roof over my head.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty big. If you imagine how many millions, if not billions of people in the world don't have a roof over their head. You'd become very grateful for the one you do have.
Well, and when I put it, a little personal revelation here, looking at the news and stuff, there have been times I actually say I'm grateful for the fact that bombs are not going off in my neighborhood. I'm grateful for the fact that I can walk from my car to my house and get into my house and still be alive.
Yeah. Those are good things to be grateful for. Yeah, and, you know, so many of us don't think of that. We don't think, you know, I was just telling someone the other day that when I first went to India in 1973, I was so blown away by the fact that the people living in India on the streets who didn't have a roof over their heads, who, if a family of four or five or six had one blanket to share, they were grateful to God. And the amazing thing was they all looked happy. And, you know, I always have to preface this by saying I'm not suggesting that poverty is the route to happiness, but I'm simply saying that obviously wealth is not the route to happiness either, because if it were, we'd be much happier in this culture than we are, and the wealthy people in the culture would be much happier than they seem to be. So I came home from that first trip to India really amazed by all that we really have to be grateful for that we just take as sort of routine and think, well, why don't I have a bigger house and a better roof over my head? Why don't I have a bigger car and a newer car and a better partner and a better job and all of these things that most of the people in the world don't have at all, you know? And so it's a really interesting practice to stop and just realize how good we have it, especially here in the United States. So, yeah, I think it's what you're suggesting is really worthwhile.
So how can a person cultivate gratitude?
Well, I think it's by first, if nothing else, just sitting down and thinking about all of the things that you do like about your life. You know, there's an old story I used to tell about a woman who was complaining about her job. And she said, I don't like anything about my job. And I just hate it. It's awful. And so the question was asked, well, do they pay you? And she said, yes. The question is, you don't like that? You know? And then, is there anything else about your job that you do like? Well, you know, it started to come out that there were a number of things that she liked. She got paid a higher wage than most people in similar jobs. She had a private parking space right near the building, you know, that she didn't have to walk in the rain to get inside. And there were some people there that she did like. And, you know, they had a liberal vacation schedule and bonus plans and things like that. And pretty soon, this woman who hated her job had listed over 25 things about her job that she liked. So it's really an exercise like that to stop and think, you know, I don't like where I live, but there's a roof over my head. Or, you know, I don't like where I live, but I have heat, you know, in the winter. I don't like where I live, but there's a beautiful tree outside my window. You just stop and start to look more carefully and see that a lot of our discontent in life is just our mindset. And if we just stop and look and pay attention, we start to see, wow, there's all this amazing stuff around us.
So our mindset really is quite the filter or quite the mold of how we experience life, because it's been my observation that the same thing can happen to two different people, and how they receive it is dependent on what their view of reality is. It might be horrible to one person and just fine to the other.
Yeah, sure. Exactly. Exactly. You know, when I was, you and I were talking before we went on the air about a course I just offered or a lecture about gratitude. And I was researching quotations about gratitude from spiritual teachers and famous people. And I came across this quote in one of Jack Kornfield's books. He's one of the great teachers of Vipassana meditation and mindfulness. And he said this. He studied in India. He was a monk for a couple of years in the early 1970s. Now he's, you know, a famous meditation teacher here in the United States. But this is a quote from one of his early books. It says, in certain temples that I've been to, there's actually a prayer that you make asking for difficulties. And the prayer is this: may I be given the appropriate difficulties so that my heart can truly open with compassion. And I was talking to another friend recently who was going through surgery for cancer. And she said, you know, the one thing about this is that it's made me so much more empathetic and compassionate toward the millions and millions and millions of people who have been going through this. And I haven't really noticed. I wasn't even grateful that I wasn't going through it. And now that I'm going through it, I'm grateful for the opportunity to cultivate compassion. And, you know, when I was writing the book, When Prayers Aren't Answered, I really started to see that most people, looking back on their lives, will say that the greatest difficulties they've experienced were actually the greatest times of growth. They were the times when they learned, you know, I'm much more resourceful than I thought I was. I have much greater inner strength than I thought I have. I have wisdom. I have compassion. I have intuition. And all these things are the things that we learn when we're going through a difficult time. We don't necessarily cultivate those qualities when everything is hunky-dory, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a great benefit. Not that we would necessarily ask for difficulties, as this, you know, Buddhist monastery encouraged people to do, but you could, you know, if you realize that maybe you need to grow and deepen your consciousness a bit. You know, don't be so put off by the fact that you've gone through some difficulties in life. They probably have helped to make you a better person.
I would say that the lockdown offered that opportunity to a lot of people, mm-hmm. because we took for granted running out to a restaurant, going to do this, hanging out with friends, being with big groups of people. And that may be subsiding some now, but I did notice initially, as normalizing started to roll out, being really aware of, I wasn't able to do this, and now I can.
Right.
So that's something I would throw out to listeners to think about.
Yeah, in all honesty, I thought of that as such a blessing that was offered to our culture. Not in this, you know, not people getting sick and dying, but the fact that our regular, or what we would call normal lifestyle, was completely interrupted. It was
which I'm going
hold.
To do at this moment to you, unfortunately,
okay.
because we've hit the first break. You said the magic word. Everyone, hang out. We'll be back really close, really soon.
The cutting edge of conscious radio, OM Times Radio, IOM FM. Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single OM Times endeavor. Host your show with OM Times Radio Network.
Grab a cup of tea or a glass of wine and tune in for Inspired Conversations with publisher Linda Joy on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Linda creates sacred space for leading female luminaries, empowering authors, heart-centered female entrepreneurs, coaches, and healers. A soulful venue where guests openly share the fears and obstacles they've overcome, wisdom and lessons learned, and the personal journey that led them to the transformational work they do in the world. Inspired Conversations, to empower you on your path to authentic, soulful living.
Want help with your own celestial compass? Visit my site, empowermentunlimited.net, for Astro Insight forecasts for each week, month, and new and full moon. Want to explore the personal impact? Make a decision? Understand another person? It is possible. Click the Services tab to book a personal session with me. That address again, empowermentunlimited.net.
You came across someone struggling with hunger. How would you recognize them? Would you notice an 8-year-old girl who's not excited for summer break
because she may not be having lunch again until September?
Or a war veteran who's having a hard time
landing a job and getting back on his feet?
I am the 1 in 8 Americans who struggle with hunger. I am hunger in America.
Hunger can be hard to recognize. Learn why at IamHungerInAmerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Celestial Compass. I'm talking about gratitude today with Ramananda John E. Welshans. And just before the break, John, you were talking about a benefit that you saw in the lockdown that was part of the pandemic.
Yeah. And what I saw as a meditation teacher was the opportunity for us to take it as an enforced retreat. In other words, you know, we know from practicing meditation for so many years that it's really difficult to cultivate a meditation practice and to experience the benefits that meditation can offer if we only do it, you know, once a week or once a month, or, you know, we just think about doing it. Instead, some of the greatest progress you make in meditation is when you take a break from your regular routine and go on a weekend course or a week-long course or a month-long course or whatever you can arrange. But to take a break from the external world and your daily life and just focus for a period of time on going within. And I thought this is a perfect opportunity for people in the United States of America and around the world, really, to do that, to just be quiet, you know. And I noticed right away how the environment seemed to support that. First of all, how quiet it was when there were no trucks on the roads and no planes in the skies. Now, I know the mind will immediately say, well, no trucks on the road would mean there was no food in the stores and things like that, which we experienced for a little while. But I thought it was really useful for us to experience that in order to cultivate gratitude, in order to realize how much we have that we just take for granted. And maybe our state of happiness in life would be enhanced by cultivating gratitude for the many things that we just have always taken for granted. You know, it isn't this way in much of the world. One of the practices I've done for many years is when I encounter people who are obviously from other countries, I ask them what brought them here and what was the greatest surprise that they got. And the most frequent answer I get when I ask people from other countries about what was most surprising about coming to the United States is they'll say, I'm surprised by how much Americans complain. Mm-hmm. It's like we don't realize what it is we have here. And so, you know, and it was one of the things that I learned in India was to appreciate what we have here and realize that it's very special, and if we don't care for it, we'll lose it. And I think we see that in different ways in recent years. So I think it's important to be grateful for it, among other things, just so that we learn to protect it and care for it, like the environment. You know, it isn't going to withstand our abuse forever. It's showing us that. You know, it's showing us by the changes in the weather and things that are happening that nature, I think, is incredibly resilient. And if you stop abusing it, it bounces back really quickly. But if you continue to abuse it, it will continue to change in a way that ultimately, you know, could make the planet unsustainable. So there's a lot to cultivating gratitude and realizing what we have. That I think it's one of the most important spiritual practices available to us.
I would like to talk a little bit about whether there's a benefit to just paying lip service, and specifically what I think of is parents telling their children, say thank you, and the kid will go, thank you. Is there, when, you know, at least the words are coming out. Do you see what is the role of paying lip service to something? Is that like a training wheels to actually later becoming grateful? Does it have any impact on the mindset? Does it just make you mad at your parents?
Well, I think that's a really good question, and the example of it being like training wheels. You know, I think back to some of the teachings that I got. My mother was British, so she was very invested in good manners and proper conduct and so on. And when I was a child, I thought it was a little annoying. You know, nothing happened in our house unless we said please and thank you. It was like that was what got the wheels greased to get whatever it was we wanted.
Uh-huh.
It had to be please and thank you. So the motivation, perhaps, when you're a child is you do it because that's the way you get what you want. But later on, you start to realize, or at least I did, what a blessing it was. You know, like I can remember my mother taking my sister and me to the grocery store. This was in the mid-1950s, simply to give us an education in grocery store etiquette. Now, that is quite amazing. How do you behave properly in the grocery store? Like, you don't block the aisle. You know, you pull your cart to the side to make sure that people can get past you if you need to stop and read a label or something like that. And, you know, you don't run your cart into other people. You don't cut them off. You know, you let other people go first. And, you know, there was a point at which I started to realize that good manners is really about learning that there are other people in the world besides you, you know? And that's an important spiritual lesson. It's an essential spiritual lesson, that the world doesn't revolve around us as individuals, that it only works if we work together. So, yeah.
No argument with that. An odd question here is, do you think gratitude has an energy? So if you get from the, is what distinguishes saying thank you because your mom is glaring at you and you know you have to say it from actually meaning it when you say it? Sorry. I thought I had my phone off.
Hello.
I apologize.
That's okay.
So what distinguishes it, or what's the dividing line? Or,
well, I think it can be something that is taught and learned, and that over time, you know, it's kind of like any spiritual practice. You might start doing it just mechanically, whether it's contemplative prayer or meditation or yoga or whatever it is you do. You know, it might just be mechanical at first. But the interesting thing about it is that each of the practices, as you suggested, does have a vibration to it. And if you continue to do it, you start to see that you feel better when you do the sort of practices that the great spiritual traditions have prescribed for us. You just feel better. It just makes life more fun, you know? It's like love is more fun. Kindness is more fun. Gratitude is more fun. You know, and I just came across a couple of really nice quotes. This one's from Thich Nhat Hanh. He says, sometimes your joy is the source of your smile, but sometimes your smile can be the source of your joy. And David Stendhal Rast says, love wholeheartedly, be surprised, give thanks and praise. Then you will discover the fullness of your life. It is not joy that makes us grateful. It is gratitude that makes us joyful. So I think, you know, it's anything that we learn can be difficult and mechanical at first. That doesn't mean it's not worth learning. And if we see the end result of, for instance, political leaders who are celebrating unkindness and crudeness and violence and, you know, greed. And you see how ugly that is. It's really just ugly. And it doesn't create a better society for us to live in. So I think it's really worthwhile to look at these practices, to teach them to our children, to help our children understand what they have that much of the rest of the world doesn't have, and to cultivate gratitude for that. I think that's a worthwhile teaching.
The description of joy that you had just there brings to mind, to me, the Christmas morning when Scrooge awakens and he realizes he's still alive after having been taken all over reality or whatever by the three ghosts. And in some portrayals of the story, he's just running around kicking his heels and like ecstatically happy because he's been given a second chance. That's that's the level of embodiment of the energy that I'm seeing, kind of an extreme, but I think that's what you're talking about.
Yeah. Well, and you mentioned AA a little while back. You know, the experience that people have, I'm familiar with because both of my parents were alcoholic. And I saw that the only time that they were happy was when they were in AA and they were sober. And was it a struggle for them to get sober? Absolutely. But the gratitude that they felt ultimately was extraordinary. And that whole program, the 12-step program, is such an incredible roadmap for finding your way back to joy, which happens to be the subtitle of my book, Awakening from Grief. But, you know, there are these roadmaps for finding the way back to joy. And that is, you know, in the case of AA, it's making amends. It's, you know, apologizing for things that you've done and ways that you hurt other people, acknowledging them and recognizing them, but realizing that also you have this incredible spiritual dimension that can come out if you stop suppressing it with alcohol, you know? Or drugs, or shopping, or whatever it is we do to take our attention off the true inner state that we have, which is, you know, in Buddhism known as our true nature. In Christianity, you could call it Christ consciousness. In Hinduism and yoga, samadhi. You know, it's our that which is true, the real character of our being, which is inherently going to suffer and be unhappy if we're not acknowledging it. So, you know, gratitude and making amends and things like that are all roadmaps or routes to finding your way home to joy.
And don't all of these have something to do with your outlook or your frame of reference and what kind of perspective you're feeding for how you view the world?
Absolutely.
My experience with people, some people going into AA look at life in terms of everything being bad for them or wrong for them or victim mentality, which they then work through. So if you're looking for things to be bad, it's really easy to find confirmation of things being bad. Yeah. But if your framework is the little boy on Christmas morning who got a big old stinking pile of guess what and runs around going, there's got to be a pony here somewhere.
Right. My father's favorite story.
I was told that on my first day of law school. It turned out to be prescient.
Yeah.
So, but the concept of mindset and what you're feeding for your mindset.
Absolutely. You know, it's that wonderful story Wayne Dyer used to like to tell, an old story about the old Cherokee grandfather, and his grandson comes to him, and grandfather is instructing him, and he's saying, we all have two wolves living inside us. And his grandson says, well, tell me about that. And he said, well, one is a really wonderful, loving wolf that is kind and loving and generous and sweet. And he said, and the other is a wolf that is angry and greedy and violent and hateful. And they're having a battle inside each of us. So the grandson says, well, which one wins? And the grandfather says, the one we feed. Yeah, it's feeding yourself, recognizing that the mind is a wonderful tool, but a terrible master, as Ram Dass often said. It's a great servant, but if you live under its tyranny, watch out. And I think it's true that most people, referencing AA again, but it's, you know, I think most people who are struggling in any way in life and need therapy or some external guidance for a while are feeling victimized. They're feeling oppressed. They're feeling like they've been singled out for suffering. You know, just the other day, I was working with a couple whose 21-year-old daughter died suddenly at college from a congenital problem that she had that they knew about, but the medical people had thought that the daughter would live a long and, you know, normal life. And then she just suddenly died. And there's that moment when a parent would naturally feel, why would this happen to me? How could the universe do such a cruel thing? And interestingly enough, one of the great techniques for healing in that case, or in most any case, but especially dealing with the loss of someone we love, or especially a child, is to recognize that we're not alone, that there are millions and millions of millions. I keep saying that, but it's true that there are millions of people on Earth who have experienced this same loss, this same grief. It's unique to you, but it's also not unique to you in terms of the fact that many parents have lost children. And so one of the ways to begin to heal that is to start to recognize that you're part of a community of people who are grieving in that way. Even if you don't know anybody else at the moment, you can reach out and find them. So the mindset is so important in how we ultimately find happiness in life, or if we do find happiness. If we're always feeling like, of course, everything goes wrong for me, it's all terrible, that's the way it will appear. And if we're like the little boy who gets the pile of manure and says there must be a pony somewhere, that's a whole different way of looking at life. And that's something we can cultivate.
And with that, we're going to take our second break. And hang on, everybody. We'll be back very shortly.
Bringing a more conscious lifestyle to your world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
How would you like navigational tools you can use on your own? Visit my site, empowermentunlimited.net, and click the Shop tab. There you'll find lots of talks and guides explaining the big influences at work now, like Saturn in Aquarius and Uranus in Taurus. You'll also find a variety of guided visualizations for relaxing, clearing your energy, or getting to know planetary archetypes. That address again, empowermentunlimited.net.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on Om Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
If I could be you,
and you could be me for just 1 hour.
If you could find a way
to get inside
each other's mind.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We've all felt left out. And for some, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Welcome back to Celestial Compass. We're talking about gratitude with Ramananda John E. Welshans. And a thought that I had with the various examples that you've been exploring, John, is seems to me gratitude is a way of getting out of ourselves, getting over ourselves.
Yeah. And also, like, you know, what was mentioned in that commercial, to walk a mile in somebody else's shoes, that is a really useful spiritual practice, cultivating empathy, cultivating gratitude. You know, if you cultivate empathy and you start to feel, to allow yourself to feel what other people are feeling, and that's a natural instinct that we have, that's often we're trained to not feel it. But if we do learn to feel it, you know, like yesterday I was watching a football game and I was thinking how violent it is and how brutal and how people are being hurt and carried off the field in every game. And, you know, I mean, a part of me likes football, but I think this is training us as a culture to see suffering as entertainment, to see violence as entertainment. And football's the least of it. I mean, the movies that we put out and watch enthusiastically are, you know, kind of astounding. And those are all ways of overriding our natural instinct for compassion. And without compassion, it's hard to have gratitude, because we're not going to recognize how good we have it. We're always going to think that we need something more. And, you know, looking for fulfillment outside ourselves is like pursuing a mirage. And the way the culture trains us to do it, you know, like, you could never have enough money to be fulfilled. Or here's an interesting one. You could never get angry enough to become happy. You know, it just doesn't go there. It's a path to a different experience. You want to be happy? You know, you cultivate empathy, you cultivate compassion, you cultivate generosity. I mean, I'm fascinated that I've known a lot of really wealthy people in my life and only a small handful who are actually happy. And the ones that I know who are happy, I ask them, what is it about your life that makes you happy? They always say the same thing. They say, helping other people, giving money away. Well, that's fascinating. So you start out by thinking, I'll be happy if I can amass a fortune. And then you realize that maybe I can only be happy if I give it away. You know, it's interesting to see that. And, you know, Bill Gates and Warren Buffett and now, what's his name at Amazon, Jeff Bezos, you know, have all said, I'm going to give my fortune away. Why? Because maybe they're realizing that it didn't make them happy. And that that helping other people would, that compassion and generosity would. Fascinating.
Well, it does have, this concept of mindset, I think, is a really, really important one. And there are little platitudes that people throw around. One I often am guilty of is form follows thought. So, you know, the way you think about something, it creates the actuality of your experience. What I guess another way of looking at this is something I always challenge people to do, especially if they're in a real puzzling situation, is to ask the question, how does this benefit me? And at first, you know, the answer might be a kind of snarky one, but if you sit with that question for a while, you can often, might take retrospect, see how it was a good thing. I mean, I can think numerous events in my life that were incredibly unwelcome the moment they happened, but many wonderful benefits grew out of them.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's what I was saying earlier when I said that it's often the difficulties in our lives that cause us to grow the most. You know, I look back on my life and, you know, the first thing that happened to me that was difficult was I almost died at the age of 3 from polio. And then, you know, I had several years of convalescence when I didn't have a normal childhood where I was out playing with other kids. I was home in bed, you know, trying to recover. And, you know, a little later in life, my parents started their drinking, and our home was a nightmare to live in. It was like a hell realm. And yet, you know, I look back on all of that. You know, a lot of other stuff happened since then. But the formation of my life, my experience with polio, where I realized that, you know, people do die. Children can die. And I was very blessed to live. And my parents' alcoholism, I finally learned to look at that as if they were sacrificing their own happiness so that I could see very clearly what I didn't want to become when I became an adult. It's fascinating, you know?
And it's also really attuned you to all kinds of experiences that people go through.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, because it taught me empathy. It taught me empathy for people who have parents who are struggling with addiction. And, you know, then by, you know, default, I'm also feeling what parents must feel like when they're struggling with children who are struggling with addiction. Mm-hmm. That's a horrible situation for a parent to go through. And, you know, it's hard to see where the growth might be, but it's there. It's there if you really look and work with it, and it's sometimes just surrendering to the devastating sadness and the fact that you can't control it. And yet, you know, it's fascinating. Your work in astrology, you know, one of the things that saved me as a child is I used to lay on the front lawn at our house in New Jersey, and I'd look up at the stars at night. And I would contemplate the universe being infinite. And my parents would be in the house, you know, like 50 feet away, screaming at each other. And I'd be looking up with tears coming out of my eyes because the universe was infinite. And I'm thinking, I can't comprehend this. And yet I see all these planets, and they're all right where they're supposed to be. And it's all very orderly, you know. And, you know, so that you can use astrology to predict where the planets are going to be and what the influencers are going to be, you know, hundreds of years in the future. It's amazing. How does that happen? I don't know.
And yet, they're visually mesmerizing just as well. I mean, what
exactly.
Child doesn't like to just stare up at the sky?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, and things like, you know, you're looking at some of the stars that burned out hundreds of years ago, and their light is just getting to Earth now. You know, that's fascinating. But I love the fact that they're all right where they're supposed to be. You know, that just fascinates me. You know, Meher Baba, who was a great Indian spiritual teacher, used the force of gravity as a way of explaining the power of love in the universe. And he said, you know, it's really like the fact that the planets all relate to each other through this magnetic force. Is like you could literally say the planets love each other, you know, and the universe is an expression of love because it all hangs together in such an orderly way. Fascinating.
I'm liking that very much.
Yeah, it's kind of reassuring.
It is. Well, then you have thoughts like, does that mean that each of us is where we're supposed to be? Well, all right. So yeah. Looking for silver linings, keeping there's something to your what kind of mindset are you feeding with your response to things? So even mm-hmm. if you're just going through mechanically, like I have running water, my shower works, the roof's over my head, it's not leaking. It gets through to you on some level rather than detailing all the things you hate, because when you do that, I will tell you this. Here's my example. I had a roommate who I had an increasingly poor opinion of, who would not do things, and we split taking care of items in the kitchen and communal items. I was out of town for the weekend, and on my way driving back, I just started thinking of all the things that she never did and never did and never did, and I worked myself up so that when I walked in the house and I saw that over the course of the weekend, she couldn't get off her duff to replace the toilet paper, I blew up at her in a way that ruined our friendship. Because I had fed that so violently. I'm sure that there are, the examples probably aren't as dramatic for feeling it, feeding it in a positive way, but I don't know, maybe you have one.
Well, I think that what it boils down to, you know, like one time I went to my to visit with Ram Dass, and I was taking care of my dad when he was old and sick and dying of cancer. And he wasn't being nice to me. And it was sort of like his old alcoholic personality just coming out. And I thought, here I am being like Mother Teresa taking care of him. And he's not recognizing that. He's just complaining about all the things that he sees as my shortcomings. So I go to Ram Dass and he goes, he said to me, don't you understand that all anger is anger at God? And I said, no, I guess I don't understand that. Can you explain it to me? He said, well, whenever you get angry, what you're really saying is if I were God, I'd have made the universe better than this. You know, if I were God, I'd have made a better roommate than this one who sits on her duff all the time and doesn't, you know, even change the toilet paper. He said, you know, you're just complaining about the way God made things. He said, how about, you know, you look at it like this, that your father, in my case, he said, was just, it's just being the way God made him. That's his problem. Your problem is that you're getting angry about it. And that's, you know, then it becomes your problem. So he said to me an interesting thing I've never forgotten. He said, why don't you see your father as your guru? Now, that's a whole, you know, that's a very deep topic, actually. But I think the point is that the easy way for me to realize how to deal with it was simply to say to my father at a certain point, maybe you and I shouldn't live together because we don't seem to get along when we live together. So I'm going to move out and I'm going to come see you every other day and we're going to have a nice visit every other day. And when it starts to get weird, you know, I'll just go home and then I'll come back 2 days later. And we'll try again. And that was a really interesting strategy. It was just kind of realizing that, you know, the problem that people have in relationships is basically they want the other person to be different than they are. And, you know, they're the way God made them. So why don't we, you know, just embrace the possibility of accepting that and then say, well, maybe the way God made this person, I don't find it comfortable to live with them or to be in this kind of relationship. Maybe there's another kind of relationship, or maybe we just need to part and, you know, say farewell to one another. But, you know, that's kind of it. It's when you see it, it's really just, I want the universe to be the way I want it. And I want this person to behave the way I think they should. And you can say, you know, being a slob when you're living with someone else, you shouldn't be that way. But that's a judgment that we make. You know, find a roommate who's as fastidious as you are. You know, that's much better strategy.
So it sounds as if gratitude is a jumping off point for pretty much reconsidering and understanding your life and all of humanity. I mean, it seems pretty wide ranging here.
It's, you know, I mean, it seems so simple, but I'm so glad that you brought this up and made it the subject today, Kathy, because it's such a basic and important spiritual tool. And it is the thing that can change your life so dramatically. You know, when I'm working with people who are grieving, there are two things that I recommend to them that I think are relatively easy that will change their experience of life. Number one is to spend as much time as possible in nature without earbuds in, without your cell phone on, just sitting in nature, listening to the sounds, feeling the sensations, hearing the birds, feeling the breeze, watching the water move, whatever it is. Just tuning to nature. And the other one is cultivating gratitude. Sitting down and saying, well, you know, I think my life stinks, but what are the things that I'm happy about? that I like to have, that I appreciate. Those two things will revolutionize your life.
And with that, unfortunately, our time is running out. Would you tell people where they can find you online?
Online, the address is onesoulonelove.com. That's all spelled out. onesoulonelove.com. It's also my name, johnwelshons.com.
Oh, great. Okay. Well, yeah. I thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us. It's always it seems very comforting when you're here.
Oh, I feel comforted by you too.
Well,
thank you.
It's a comfort fest.
Yeah.
All right.
You're a great host.
Well, thank you. And thank you for being here. And thank you, everybody, for listening. And again, you can find my forecasts at omtimes.com and also at my site, empowermentunlimited.net. You can read all about the mindset adjustments that we have coming up and that are possible with this wonderful burst of energy in Sagittarius. So thank you to everybody, and we'll talk again in a couple of weeks.